The Department of Defense is preparing a new edition of Better Buying Power. It'll be the third version of the Pentagon's effort to reshape how it acquires what it needs. Bill Greenwalt is a fellow at the Marilyn Ware Center for Security Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Industrial Policy, and he's writing again about defense acquisition reform and breaking defense. Bill, it's great to have you back on the program here. You get at one of the truths, as you call it, early on in this piece, one of the truths the last 50 years of acquisition practice, whenever the military really needed something, it bypasses the traditional acquisition process and uses a more streamlined approach. I thought of the JDM missile. I thought especially of the MRAP in the height of the Iraq war. Why is it that some of these alternative ways of getting what the Pentagon needs quickly don't become the mainstream way of getting what the Pentagon needs, Bill?
Well, I think the traditional system is designed for a 15-20 year long term deployment, and there's so many rules and regulations focusing on that. But when the Pentagon really needs something, they need something now, and so they can't go to that system to get what they want. So they go outside the system, whether it's rapid acquisition, whether it's streamlining competition, whether it's using kind of the 1950s acquisition prototype approach.
So at this point, is that approach, have we used that approach often enough that it's fair to say that there are kind of, even if it's just de facto, there are two approaches? There's the rapid acquisition model, and maybe it gets jiggered around and fine-tuned from time to time, and then there's the standard acquisition model?
I would say yes, but the rapid acquisition model is only used in times of emergency. So in other words, you saw it come up in Iraq and Afghanistan, dealing with NRAPs, counter ID, surveillance. You see it in times of crisis when we can't access commercial products and a new type of exemption is put in place. So yes, it's there, but it's only there when leadership decides that yes, we need to turn to it, and then if not, we will go on the traditional path.
So you write about kind of some of a little bit of the history of some of the exceptions that have been available. Give me a thumbnail sketch of some of the highlights of that bill.
Sure. I would say the three biggest ones, exceptions to the process. One is the other transaction authority, and that is essentially emulates the Space Act of 1958, giving the Pentagon the ability to waive all acquisition rules. And that was used heavily in the development of unmanned vehicles. The second is commercial item acquisition, and that was given to the Pentagon and the government in the early 90s to essentially attract Silicon Valley into address commercial IT needs. And the third is the rapid acquisition authorities that were given to the Pentagon in the early 2000s to deal with 9/11.
Would it be reasonable to establish, if we haven't already, that what I referred to as kind of a de facto second system as the second system? Or are we in the situation now where when we need to acquire something rapidly, we have to do it kind of, at least policy-wise, from scratch?
I think there is a need to establish a second system in a more methodical way. And the reason for that is that I think more and more we're going to look for capabilities that we need to deploy in less than 5 years, in 1 to 2 years. And it's better to have this system available and get it right versus the ad hoc way we do it now. And then if there are other things that need a traditional 15-year to 20-year development process, and I'm hope to say that I hope that goes as a relic of the past at some point, we can use that system.
Yeah, it would seem to me that if anything would call for that kind of a system where that seems to be appropriate, it would be the largest of the large weapons systems. But even as technology becomes more and more embedded in those kinds of technology, that even seems to be maybe problematic, because we're seeing what's happening, for example, with some of the software sets inside the LCS and the F-35.
No, absolutely. I think what we should see is the long-term traditional acquisition process should probably look to systems that are not going to change a lot, that we don't need to insert new technologies and new IT and so on. And those can operate under the kind of the long-term process that we have with all the checks and balances and so on. It's this new need to insert technology and get things out in the field faster that we're going to need some type of a process that is much faster than we have today.
Bill Greenwald with the American Enterprise Institute is writing about acquisition reform in Breaking Defense. You write, restrictions and regulations have incentivized many emerging commercial companies to stay out of DoD contracting. I guess for the folks that are currently in DoD contracting, that's probably a good thing. Bill Lynn said on this program about a month ago, maybe a little longer, that many companies that formerly were in the defense space also had commercial practices. They've either sold off their commercial business or they've gotten out of the DoD business, and it's kind of the landscape has kind of shaped itself into something that is pretty much DoD only. What consequences do you think that's created for the defense industrial base, Bill?
Well, I think it's that's great for the existing defense contractors, but it's terrible for the Department of Defense. And the reason for that is that more and more research and development is occurring in commercial companies, is occurring outside of the federal government. And to gain access to that research and knowledge and technical base, you have to incentivize these companies to come in. If not, we're relegated to have these defense unique contractors essentially replicate the research and development out on the commercial side. And I think that's a losing battle.
Bill, you write about some steps. You say to reinvigorating commercial contracting authorities. The first one you suggest is to roll the clock back and prohibit any regulatory requirement added since 1998 to be applied to a commercial item. What are some of those that are so potentially damaging in your view that we should just get rid of them?
Well, what happened, and it's a combination of a number of them. We started off in 98 with a streamlined version in the Federal Acquisition Regulation of just a few clauses that would apply to commercial items. And in the last 10 years or 15 years, you've doubled, tripled, quadrupled the number of clauses and requirements that apply. So each one of these things, a commercial company has to ensure that, yes, we've got lawyers to deal with this, to make sure that we're in compliance with it, and so on. And that drives costs and basically drives some of these companies to say, I don't want to do it anymore.
What would fix that, in addition to the regulatory rollback, what other incentives do commercial companies need to get back into the DoD market, and how can they be done in such a way that you don't get a lot of outcry from the companies that are already in the space and their lobbyists?
I think the near-term political ease of doing that would be to ensure that commercial companies can subcontract DoD unique contractors as a commercial item. And the bureaucratic machinations of what commercial item determinations that are going through the system right now do not impact these commercial companies. I think that's one possibility. And then obviously you're partnering with the defense unique guys and the commercial guys.
You write, expanding and reinvigorating these and other exceptions to the traditional acquisition process can either be the primary focus of near-term acquisition reform efforts or a positive first step before enacting more comprehensive reform. I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, Bill, that we're going to see Better Buying Power version 3.0 in the not-too-distant future. What is your view of where Better Buying Power ranks on that spectrum, near-term acquisition reform effort versus more comprehensive reform? And what do you like about what Frank Kendall has done with Better Buying Power so far?
Well, what I think is it's still a near-term effort. It isn't a let's zero-base the system and start over, and that's probably realistic. What I do like about where he's going is on the prototype side, although I think where he's looking at prototypes may be not necessarily on developing operational prototypes with, for example, using other transaction authority to develop those type of systems like we developed in Lockheed Skunk Works or Boeing Phantom Works or in the 1950s. I think that those operational deployable prototypes, I think, are something I'd like to see him do more of. But I think his emphasis on prototypes is very good.
If you were going to sit beside him as he's preparing Better Buying Power 3.0, what would you say what would you put on the list of things to make sure get in this time?
Expand the use of other transactions for deployable operable prototypes, expand the commercial item exemption, and expand and maintain rapid acquisition authorities in the Department of Defense.
Great column. Always great to have you on, Bill, and thanks for your thoughts today.
Thank you, Francis. I appreciate it.
Bill Greenwald's a fellow at the Maryland Ware Center for Security Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, writing in Breaking Defense, and Bill is former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Industrial Policy. You can find his piece in Breaking Defense, and you can listen to my conversation with Bill again later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.